Now we're turning in our Bibles tonight to the book of Exodus, chapter 33, please. The book of Exodus, chapter 33, and verse 1. And our subject is tonight the divine presence. The divine presence. We read in Exodus 33 and verse 1. And the Lord said unto Moses, Depart, and go up hence, thou and the people which thou hast brought up out of the land of Egypt, unto the land which I swear unto Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, Unto thy seed will I give it. And I will send an angel before thee, and I will drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite, unto a land flowing with milk and honey. For I will not go up in the midst of thee, for thou art a stiff-necked people, lest I consume thee in the way. And when the people heard these evil tidings, they mourned, and no man did put on him his ornaments. For the Lord had said unto Moses, Say unto the children of Israel, Ye are a stiff-necked people. I will come up into the midst of thee in a moment, and consume thee. Therefore now put off thy ornaments from thee, that I may know what to do unto thee. And the children of Israel stripped themselves of their ornaments by the Mount Horeb. Moses took the tabernacle and pitched it without the camp, afar off from the camp, and called it the tabernacle of the congregation. And it came to pass that everyone which sought the Lord went unto the tabernacle of the congregation, which was without the camp. And it came to pass when Moses went out unto the tabernacle, that all the people rose up and stood every man at his tent door, and looked after Moses until he was gone into the tabernacle. And it came to pass as Moses entered into the tabernacle, the cloudy pillar descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked with Moses. All the people saw the cloudy pillar stand at the tabernacle door, and all the people rose up and worshipped every man in his tent door. And the Lord spake unto Moses face to face, as a man speaketh unto his friend. And he turned again into the camp of his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, departed not out of the tabernacle. Moses said to the Lord, See, thou sayest unto me, Bring up this people, and thou hast not let me know whom thou wilt send with me. Yet thou hast said, I know thee by name, and thou hast also found grace in my sight. Now, therefore, I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, show me now thy way, that I may know thee, that I may find grace in thy sight, and consider that this nation is thy people. And he said, My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. And he said unto him, If thy presence go not with thee, carry us not up hence. For wherein shall it be known that I and the people have found grace in thy sight? Is it not in that thou goest with us? So shall we be separated, I and thy people, from all the people that are upon the face of the earth. And the Lord said unto Moses, I will do this thing also that thou hast spoken, for thou hast found grace in my sight, and I know thee by name. And he said, I beseech thee, show me thy glory. And he said, I will make all my goodness pass before thee, and I will proclaim the name of the Lord before thee, and will be gracious to whom I will be gracious, and show mercy on whom I will show mercy. And he said, Thou canst not see my face, for there shall no man see me and live. The Lord said, Behold, there is a place by me, and thou shalt stand upon a rock. And it shall come to pass, while my glory passeth by, that I will put thee in a cleft of the rock, and will cover thee with my hand while I pass by. And I will take away thine hand, and thou shalt see my back parts, but my face shall not be seen. The book of Exodus, in which we find the journeyings of the children of Israel, falls into three main sections. From chapter 1, verse 1, until chapter 12, verse 36, we see Israel in Egypt. And then from chapter 12, verse 37, to chapter 18, verse 27, we see Israel moving from Egypt to Sinai. And then from chapter 19, verse 1, until the end of the book, we see Israel at Sinai. Israel in Egypt. Israel moving from Egypt to Sinai. Israel at Sinai. In the last section of the book, there are three main subjects that are brought before us. In chapters 19 to 24, we are confronted with the law of God, the Decalogue, the Ten Commandments. In chapters 25 to 31, and in chapters 35 to 40, the book of Exodus is taken up with the tabernacle that points to the person and work of Jesus Christ. And then in chapters 32 to 34 of the book of Exodus, there is brought before us the idolatry of the nation of Israel. These subjects, interesting as though they are, do not come within the sphere of our present meditation. Therefore, we bypass them, only to mention them as they have a direct bearing upon our present study. As we move into the final section of the book of Exodus, we are confronted with many wonderful statements. You remember that tremendous statement that Moses made as he stood in the midst of an idolatrous camp. He cried, "Who is on the Lord's side? Let him come unto me." And then there was that heartfelt request that fell from the lips of Moses when he said to the Lord, here in this very chapter in verse 18, "Show me thy glory." Here was a man who never lost the desire to know God intimately and to know God increasingly. And then there was that wonderful statement that was made about Moses when he came down from the mount after receiving the commandments of God. We read, "The skin of his face shone." In other words, the result of his fellowship with God was observable to all to see. However, it is not so much the words that came from Moses, nor the words that were spoken about Moses, but it is the words that came to Moses from the very lips of God that I want us to think about this evening. These words that came from the lips of God assuring Moses of the divine presence with him. How wonderful are the promises of the Bible. No pages in any other literature are lusted with such golden encouragements as we have here. The Apostle Peter speaks of them as exceeding great and precious promises. And truly they are exceedingly great and precious. Great both in nature and number. Precious both in the hope they inspire and in their solid reality. But there is one class of promises that have always held a special appeal for the Lord's people. It is that large section, that large group, in which we have the assurance of the divine presence with us. There is one thing more than another that the people of God have always longed to be quite sure about. And it is this very thing, the divine presence with us. And God has graciously responded in the many assurances that He has given to us in His Word. Some of you use as your daily reading notes, radio Bible class, Bible study notes. Henry Boyce of radio Bible class tells us that when he was a little boy of 7 years of age, he was taken into hospital, apparently dying from tuberculosis. Despite his constant pain and discomfort, he found peace in the hymns that his parents had taught him. One day while he was singing these words, "If Jesus goes with me, I'll go anywhere," a lady came to visit him in a wheelchair. She took his hand in hers and she began to weep. Years later, Henry's father told him the story. As a Christian, she was experiencing constant illness. She came very agitated and upset when the doctor admitted her to hospital. And full of self-pity, she complained and she said, "Lord, I've tried to be faithful to you all of my life. Now you're sending me where I won't even have Christian fellowship. I guess it doesn't pay to serve you." No sooner had she been brought into her hospital room than she heard this little boy singing, "It's heaven to me where'er I be if Christ is there." Ashamed of her rebellious attitude toward the Lord, she decided to meet the little one, or the one with the high soprano voice, who had brought conviction to her heart and soul. Expecting to meet a mature Christian, she was shocked to meet a little boy who was so ill that he might not make it through the day, the experience taught her that she could rejoice in every circumstance because the Lord was always with her. Here is Moses getting this very assurance. Isn't it interesting that Moses didn't seek assurance as to root or provisions? He didn't ask for map or supplies. One thing alone filled his thoughts. One thing alone filled his mind. That the Lord's presence, which had been in strength and stay through all the days of the march, should be with him still. And so he comes to the Lord and says in verse 12, have a look at it. See, thou sayest unto me, bring up this people. And thou hast not let me know whom thou wilt send with me. Yet thou hast said, I know thee by name. And thou hast also found grace in my sight. Now therefore I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, show me now thy way, that I may know thee, that I may find grace in thy sight, and consider that this nation is thy people. God knew what Moses was after. It wasn't the presence of angels, it was the presence of God himself for which the man of God was pleading. And so God graciously responded, verse 14, and the Lord said, my presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. Now, that promise is a benediction in itself. But my dear friends, when you put it in its context, when you put it in its setting, its fuller glory breaks in upon us. You know, a jewel is beautiful in itself, but its beauty is enhanced by its appropriate setting. And so it is with this wonderful statement. I want us to look at it tonight in the setting, in the context in which we find it in Exodus 33. First of all, I want us to look at the setting of it in the life of Moses. Secondly, I want us to look at the wording of it as it came from God. Thirdly, I want us to look at the proving of it in our own experience. Or, if you want it alliterated, I want us to look at the timing of it. I want us to look at the telling of it, and I want us to look at the testing of it. You see, this statement was spoken to Moses in connection with one of the most deplorable incidents in the wilderness journeys of the children of Israel. The Lord had raised up Moses to bring Israel out of the groveling bondage of Egypt into the freedom and blessing in Canaan, and he had demonstrated his presence by miraculous interventions, preserving his people, protecting his people, providing for his people. And yet now while Moses is in the mount receiving the commandments and the instructions regarding the tabernacle, the people have turned aside quickly to idolatry and dancing naked before the golden calf. Moses returns to the camp. He sees the idol worship in progress. The tables of the law drops from his trembling hands. He seizes the wretched image. He burns it in the fire. He grinds it to powder. But my dear friends, if the first sight of Israel's idolatrous obscenity kindles the anger of Moses, the thought of it afterwards dazes him with grief. A broken-hearted man, he sinks down before the Lord and he sobs out his prayer. Look at chapter 32 and verse 31. Here's his prayer. Verse 31, oh, this people have sinned a great sin, chapter 32, and have made them gods of gold. Yet now if thou wilt forgive their sin, and if not, blot me, I pray thee, out of thy book which thou hast written. My friends, do you see the position that Moses takes? Here he is. He's taking the position of an intercessor, one who was interceding with God on behalf of a sinful nation. I wonder, do you ever take that position? Do you know what it is to intercede with God on behalf of a sinful nation? Do you know what it is to plead with God on behalf of a sinful nation, on behalf of sinners who are lost? I wonder, does God have to say to us, when he said in the day of Ezekiel, I sought for a man among them that they should stand in the gap before me for the land, but I found none. Moses prays. God answers. Do you see the answer of the Lord? Chapter 32, verse 33. And the Lord said unto Moses, whosoever has sinned against me, him will I blot out of my book. Therefore now go, lead the people unto the place of which I have spoken unto thee. Notice these words. Behold, mine angel shall go before thee. Nevertheless, when I visit, I will visit their sin upon them. And the Lord plagued the people because they made the calf which Aaron made. And the Lord said unto Moses, depart and go up hence, thou and the people which thou hast brought out of the land of Egypt, unto the land which I swear unto Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, saying, unto thy seed will I give it, and I will send an angel before thee, and I will drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hevite, the Jebusite, unto a land flowing with milk and honey, for I will not go up in the midst of thee, for thou art a stiff-necked people, lest I consume thee in the way. You say that was a gracious answer. Yes, my friends. Yet to a man like Moses, to a heartbroken servant of God, who was disillusioned, who was apprehensive about the future, who was yearning more than ever for the assurance of the divine companionship, such an answer was an answer, and yet no answer. I mean, what consolation was there in the words, I will send an angel before thee? My friends, it wasn't the presence of angels that Moses was looking for. It was the presence of God for which he was pleading. What was it that the Canaanites should be dispossessed and Israel gain the land flowing with milk and honey if the Lord himself were not with his people? God's blessings without himself were not blessings at all to the hungry soul. Many years ago in England, one of the old-time kings was displeased with the city fathers, and so displeased was he with the city fathers that he threatened to move the royal court from London to some other location. The mayor replied, as long as he leaves the River Thames, we'll do very well. But how different it is with the believer and his God. My friends, all the blessings of Canaan are no compensation for the absence of divine companionship. Is that not how God's people have always felt? Is that not how Moses felt? Look at verse 14, chapter 33. He says, if thy presence go not with me, carry us not up hence. And it was in loving kindness toward his heart-stricken servant that the Lord gave this further assurance. My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. My friends, this promise was spoken to a disappointed man. A man into whose life there had come a disheartening disillusionment. You see, the people on whom such high hopes were set had proved faithless. The tablets of the law lay broken before the mountain. The wrath of God burned against these stiff-necked idolaters. Poor Moses, his disappointment was great. And yet it was to this man at this time that this comforting word was given, my presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. I wonder tonight, am I speaking to some disappointed Christian? You started out with godly intention. You started out with high hopes, but experiences brought disillusionment. And now you're disappointed with life. There's an incurable dull ache in your heart about the way things have transpired. And maybe you're here tonight and you're disappointed with life. And you're disappointed with yourself. And you're disappointed with other Christians. My friend, tonight, listen. This promise is specifically for you. My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. You see, the Lord delights to dwell with the disappointment, that their sense of disappointment may be swallowed up in the compensation of His friendship. The Lord is with you. And He's wanting to become so real to you that your disappointment shall be transformed into triumph by His realized presence. It was spoken to a disappointed man. But then if you look at the context, you'll notice that it was spoken to a discouraged man. A man whose great work for the Lord seemed to be falling to pieces. How deeply discouraged and disheartened the servant of God must have been. You see, not only have the people proved utterly, utterly undependable and perverted, not only had 3,000 Israelites fallen by the sword, not only had the tabernacle been taken without the corrupted camp, but the Lord Himself had indicated the withdrawal of His personal presence from His people. Look what He says in verse 3 of chapter 33. I will not go up in the midst of thee, for thou art a stiff-necked people, lest I consume thee in the way. It's true that God had said an angel would lead the host. But my dear friends, the presence of an angel without God Himself is mere guidance without fellowship. And discouraged and dispirited, Moses comes before the Lord and he says in verse 12, See, thou sayest unto me, bring up this people, and thou hast not let me know whom thou wilt send with me. Yet thou hast said, I know thee by name, and thou hast also found grace in my sight. Now therefore I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, show me thy way that I may know thee, that I may find grace in thy sight, and consider that this nation is thy people. Wonder tonight, are you a discouraged servant? Why those falling tears? Wonder, have you been jealous for the honor of your Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and it has seemed to bring nothing but misunderstanding? Wonder, have you been faithfully witnessing for the Savior and yet you've seen no souls come to Christ? Wonder, have you been earnestly seeking to win those children and young people to the Master and yet they seem so unresponsive? Wonder, have you been seeking for a deeper spiritual life, a richer spiritual life, a nobler spiritual life, but somehow it hasn't come and depression has set in? Discouraged child of God, this promise is for you tonight. My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. The Lord is really with you. And my friend, He wants to make His presence a living reality in your life. It's in the realization of His presence that there lies the secret of unfailing courage. Many years ago, Robert Bruce, a godly Scottish Presbyterian minister, attracted many people to his church. On one occasion, an earl drove a tremendous distance to get to one of the services. And he was getting impatient for the service to commence. And so he tapped the steward that was walking up and down the aisle. He tapped the steward's shoulder and he said, When's the minister going to commence the service? The steward left the church building. He went to the vestry door, but hearing conversation from within, he refrained from knocking. And then he returned to the earl and he said, He won't come today, your lordship. For I heard him say to someone that he cannot go without him. And though he kept on asking, I did not hear the other answer him at all. Thank God tonight we have the assurance that the other one is always with us. But what a difference it will make if we travel on in the conscious realization of His presence. Spoken to a disappointed man. Spoken to a discouraged man. Then look at the setting again. Spoken to a diffident man. Probably lacking in self-confidence now. A man bending beneath the weight of a great responsibility, feeling that the burden was more than he could bear, apprehensive about the unknown future. My friend, did ever a man carry a heavier burden than Moses? I tell you, imagine looking after 2.5 million. It's some job. And Moses' responsibility was to bring them out. Ah, but that was only the negative. Moses' responsibility was to bring them in. Is it therefore surprising that above everything else, he longs for the personal presence of God Himself? I remember Dr. Paisley saying some years ago that when God calls a man out for special service, there's always a sense of responsibility plus a sense of loneliness. The true servant of God must often walk a pathway where others cannot accompany him. And that has made him long for the Lord's presence with him. And has God ever failed us? To those of you tonight who bear heavy burdens, to those of you who are lonely tonight because of your attachment to the Lord Jesus, this promise comes with heavenly cheer, my presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. Yes, I am with thee when there falls no shadow across the golden glory of the day, and I am with thee when the storm clouds gather, dimming the brightness of the onward way in days of loss and loneliness and sorrow, of care and weariness and fretting pain, and days of weakness and of deep depression, of futile effort when thy life seems vain. When youth is fled and death is put far from thee, lover and friend who made the journey sweet. When age has come with slowly failing powers, and the dark valley waits thy faltering feet, when courage fails thee for the unknown future, and the heart sings beneath its weight of fear, still I am with thee, strength and rest and comfort, thy counselor through all earth's changing years. Whatever goes, whatever stays, my presence shall be with thee all the day. Now that's the setting of it. Look at verse 14 and look at the wording of it. That the Lord did relate this promise to Moses in spoken words is seen from verse 14, the first three words. And he said. You say, what did he say? My presence shall go with thee, and I'll give thee rest. Do you remember what John Wesley said on his deathbed? The best of all, God is with us. God is with us. Someone asked him on one occasion, Mr. Wesley, why do the Methodists die well? He said, because they have a conscious realization of God's presence. Best of all, God is with us. You'll notice that Moses was guaranteed certain things here. He was guaranteed certain companionship. My presence shall. You see, the divine assurances are never weakened by any suggestion of falteringness. When God says, my presence shall go with thee, he means that without perhaps or peradventure, he'll be with us right to the end of the journey. The soul that on Jesus has leaned for repose, he will not desert to its foes. That soul, though all hell shall endeavor to shake, he'll never, never forsake. It was certain companionship. But look again at verse 14. It was close companionship. Did you notice the first word in the promise is that precious pronoun, my. And it's that word, my, that has the emphasis here. You see, God's promise to send an angel far from satisfied Moses. But now at length he tenderly yields to a servant's moving entreaty, and he says, my presence. The Septuagint, recognizing the emphasis on the pronoun, translates it like this. I myself will go with thee, and I will give thee rest. And my dear friends, that priceless lie pledges to us the step-by-step, side-by-side, heart-to-heart fellowship of God Himself through all our way. My presence shall go with thee. I tell you, that meant more than infallible superintendence from a distant heaven. It meant the companionship who was enough to meet all Moses' need for guidance and sustenance and strength. An unchanging, undeparting friend would company with him throughout all the wilderness wandering. A wonderful friend who would sit with him in the tent, who would stand with him in the council, who would go forth with him to the field of battle.
My friends, how can we be lonely tonight? How can we experience a sense of loneliness? For this everlasting friend has promised to travel with us down the desert road. My presence shall go with thee. But look at it again. Literally it means this. My face shall go with thee. Was this not a beautiful antidote to Moses' gloomy anxiety? There can be no darkness in that light. Where regular communion with God keeps the soul bathed in the glory light of the divine smile. You know that when someone turns their face on us, it indicates disapproval. Do you see what God is saying to Moses? He's saying, my face shall go with thee. He's indicating his gracious favor. Think of it tonight. The face of God, the smile of God, the presence of God, the company of God, as together we travel down the pathway of life. Certain companionship. Close companionship. Look at it again. Calm companionship. My presence shall go with thee. And I will give thee rest. Hanley Moll says there are two possible sorts of rest. One is rest after toil. The laying down of the weary at the end of the march. The other is rest in toil. The internal and deep repose and liberty of a spirit which has found a hidden refuge and retreat while the march, the battle, the climb are still in full progress. In other words, my friends, there is a rest after toil and there is a rest in toil. It was rest in toil that was promised to Moses. Not rest after, but rest in. My friends, is that not the kind of rest we need today? What restlessness there is. What hurry and strain. What unsettledness and tension. Is it not so easy for us as Christian believers to become agitated and nervous and discontent? How we need that soothing inner quiet that God here promises. You see, the rest flows out of the presence. The rest grows out of the presence. The consciousness of God's presence gives to the heart a rest, a stillness, a peace, a serenity that nothing else can give. Gives rest from doubt. For when God is real, doubt dies. It gives rest from fear. For if God be with us, who can be against us? It gives rest from anxiety. For if the Lord's walking with us, nothing can really harm us. It gives rest from misgiving about the future. For we know that in the providence of God, all things are working together for our good and for His glory. My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. Do you know this rest? Do you need this rest? The setting of it. The wording of it. Look at the proving of it. Can we doubt for one moment that Moses didn't take this statement and put it to the test? Undoubtedly he did. And you know, he discovered, like Abraham, that what God promised, He's well able to perform. You know, you and I need to take this promise tonight and prove it in times of adversity. Do you remember those adverse circumstances that old Jacob found himself in? What a dark day it was. When he was compelled to leave his home, his aged parents, on account of his brother's wrath and anger, but God met him at Bethel. And from the top of that letter, God gave him the promise of His presence. He said, behold, I am with thee. I am with thee, Jacob, and I will keep thee in all places whither thou goest. Did the psalmist not prove this promise? As he contemplated the valley of the shadow of death, he said, I will fear no evil. Why? Because thou art with me. The ultimate is my intimate. Is that not what the three Hebrew children found? My friend, do you remember that because of their faithfulness to the Lord, they were cast into that fiery furnace? Thank God they would not bow. They would not budge. And they would not burn. For God was with them in the fire. What a comfort the presence of God was to the Apostle Paul as he stood trial before Nero. As he looked around that courtroom, there was no friendly face that he could see. There was no familiar face that he could recognize. And he says to Timothy, at my first answer, at my first defense, no man stood with me. Notwithstanding, God stood with me and strengthened me. When Henry Light found there was no hope of recovery from consumption, he went into his study, he looked death straight in the face, and he wrote these words: I fear no foe with thee at hand to bless. Ills have no weight, tears no bitterness, where is death's sting? Where grieve thy victory, I triumph still if thou abide with me. I wonder, do you find yourself in adverse circumstances tonight? I wonder, like the three Hebrew children, do you feel the fierceness of the fire? Maybe like the Apostle Paul, you feel the forgetfulness of friends. Will you put this promise to the test? My presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. In times of adversity, in times of animosity, is that not what Israel found? The Egyptians were behind them. The sea was before them. The mountains were around them. But the enemy couldn't touch them. Why? Because the angel of God, the presence of God, stood between Israel and Pharaoh. My friends, do we not need His protecting presence every day? Indeed, every hour we need the protecting presence of our God and Savior. I need Thy presence every passing hour. Would but thy grace confound the temper's power, who like thyself my guide and stay can be through cloud and sunshine, O abide with thee. Prove it in times of adversity, in times of animosity, and in times of activity. Whatever we find ourselves doing, whether we find ourselves worshipping or witnessing or contending for the faith, it will make all the difference in the world if we realize that our dear Lord is really with us. In the year 1896, Glasgow University conferred upon Dr. David Livingstone the degree of Doctor of Lords. As Dr. Livingstone rose to speak, he was received in respectful silence. He was gaunt. He was haggard. He was drawn as a result of his hardships in tropical Africa. His left arm, crushed by a lion, was hanging helplessly at his side. He announced his resolve and determination to return to Africa, and then he said these words: would you like to know what supported me through all these years of exile among a people whose language I couldn't understand and whose attitude toward me was always uncertain and oft-time hostile? Would you like to know what was supported me? It were the words of the Lord Jesus: lo, I am with you always, even unto the end of the earth. He said, on those words I staked everything, and they never fail. My friend tonight, listen, in that ministry you're seeking to exercise for God, will you take this promise with you? My presence shall go with thee, and I'll give thee rest. Do you ever think of what the presence of God does? God's presence protects in the moment of danger. Is that not what Joseph discovered down there in Egypt? Do you know he was confronted by Potiphar's wife. He was confronted by lustful looks. He was confronted by sensual sayings. He was confronted by daily distractions. He was confronted by atrocious advances. You say, how was he able to withstand? Well, I'll tell you, for one thing, he ran. And secondly, he knew God's protection. For time and again we read, and the Lord was with Joseph. God's presence protects in the moment of danger. God's presence guides us in the moment of doubt.
Is that not what Israel discovered throughout all their wilderness wanderings? And the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light to go by day and by night. God's presence protects me in the moment of danger. God's presence guides me in the moment of doubt. God's presence sustains me in the moment of difficulty. For when thou passest through the waters, I will be with thee. And through the rivers, they shall not overflow thee. When thou walkest through the fire, thou shalt not be burned, neither shall the flame kindle upon thee. God's presence comforts me in the moment of death, for I won't have to cross Jordan alone. God's presence aids me in the moment of distress, for it was in such a moment that the Lord said to Moses, my presence shall go with thee. My face shall go with thee. I myself will go with thee and give thee rest. Rest now. And rest when we've reached the end of the journey. The divine presence. The setting of it. The wording of it. The proving of it. What a wonderful promise. What a wonderful statement. God's presence for the present. God's rest for the future. I mean, what more can we want? He with us now. We with Him then. All that remains for me is but to love and sing and wait until the angels come to bear me to the King. Burdened believer tonight, listen. God is saying to you, my presence shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. Let's pray.